Hey guys, what's up? We are the Story Crafters. My name is Jeff. We have Jared and Charlie, who is alive. He is, in fact, indeed alive and healthy and well. At least I think he's healthy. We'll find out. But also, we have a special guest on tonight. We have Casey from Firelight Fables Candle Company. How the heck are you guys? How are we doing?
Awesome.
That's good. That's good. Man,
a good one.
It's embarrassing. Like, I don't even have one of my own to
wait. Hang on,
I wish
it were lit, but it's not. But I do have another, I have one of the tea light things lit. So,
but see, you may genuinely embody them.
What
you embody the candles, you are the candles.
Yep, I am the candle.
Yeah, it's genuinely one of my favorite clips of the show when the two of you and Nicole all held up your candles, and I'm just doing one of these things.
Yeah.
All back behind me, but I digress. Yeah. It is truly a joy to have you on, Casey.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm super excited. Yeah, I feel like I know you guys all so well because I've listened to all your episodes. I'm like, so I feel like I'm talking to friends. You probably don't, you know.
No, we're all friends. We're all friends.
Yeah.
Speaking of friends, because I neglected to do this last time, Nicole is hoping to be joining us shortly, but she is not here right now. I had one job last episode, and that was to mention that Charlie wasn't there, and I failed at it. So I feel like I've redeemed myself a tiny bit at least, but.
For sure.
You have.
I will, if, for what it's worth, I will say yes, you have redeemed yourself. There not that you had any redeeming to do in our eyes prior to this.
Well, debatable.
Oh, man.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here. Like I was telling everybody prior to recording, I've been really busy again, still with work. But when I saw in the message threads that Casey, you had confirmed and we're going to be able to be here for this, I was like, I gotta make it work. So I'm really glad that I got to be here for this. So this is awesome.
Yes, I'm super glad to hear it. It has been weird without all of us together on the show, I will say. So tonight will be pretty cool once Nicole gets on. Man, all right. So Casey, we have a few formal questions. I know I literally just said this isn't going to be an interview, but I want to go ahead and just ask the obvious question here. Let's get the easy questions out of the way here. What made you want to create Firelight Fables in general? Like what gave you this inspiration to do a fantasy themed candle company?
Yeah. I mean, like the short answer is D&D. I got to the point in my tabletop role-playing escapades where I had no friends that were DMing. So I was like, all right, I'm going to be the one that learns how to DM. Yep. So started getting ready for my first campaign I was going to run. And it was going to be probably a 2 or 3 shot set on this misty wooded isle. And it was the first day we were playing, I was like, oh my goodness, I have a diffuser and some essential oils that some cedar wood, maybe I'll throw that on and, you know, just try to have it kind of smell like a forest a little bit. And I'm all for essential oils, but it wasn't exactly what I was hoping it would be like not the right smell and not the strength I was wanting. Mm-hmm. And I had messed around with making candles in the past, just for fun. And so I was kind of why don't I just make some candles? So it kind of started out as just a little bit of a hobby. And at the time I was working in the fitness industry and I had my own little personal training gym, and COVID hit. And so all gyms had to shut down for an indefinite amount of time.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just sitting at home kind of waiting for things to be able to open back up. So I was like, well, maybe just for the winter I'll make some candles and sell them to family and friends, because I have a lot of fantasy loving nerds or friends that love Lord of the Rings. And so I started making my candles and using them in my own games, and then also selling them, and then that kind of started to take off and I was really enjoying it. And so I think I kind of got to the point where I was I can control my own schedule even more doing this. And I came with personal training. And I love the creative aspect of it and getting to do so many, wearing so many different hats. So I kind of just switched over to doing candles full time. And then here we are.
That's so fun. You know, it is funny as history marches forward to see all the things that were born from, you know, the horrible plague of 2020. I mean, because so many people got into D&D and TTRPGs at that time. Obviously, you know, everybody had a lot of more free time than they're used to. So it's so funny to know that Firelight was also kind of born during that time.
That's awesome.
Yep, it was one of those like hobbies that I picked up. You know, I feel like a ton of people started new hobbies and things during COVID.
And I think it's true of any hobby, but more so with D&D. I feel like you all of a sudden one day have this idea of, yeah, I'd like to try D&D. And then all of a sudden it becomes this whole thing of, in your case, it's like, I'm going to start to DM. I'm going to make an entire game room, which is incredible, by the way. And now make this incredible line of candles that, I mean, I've said time and time again, but genuinely are my favorite candles. Yes. My wife and I both would constantly get headaches from other candles, and not once has that happened with Firelight. And genuinely love them. And it is much like you described. I love having a candle sitting on like a wax warmer, lighting a candle for a D&D game. It's so much fun. The smell, the sounds, everything is 10 out of 10.
Yeah, the thing that like I have noticed a lot too, like besides like the like they're like, you know, certain, you know, candle companies, they all like smell really strong for like a day and a half, but these actually last. Which I have a follow up question with that being, so you said you had candle making experience, like how do you go about figuring out what scent you're going to be doing? Like, how do you come, like when you like have this idea, like I've got the Mermaid's Lagoon, right? And you're like, okay, I'm at my whatever painting, crafting, whatever, wherever the heck you do this at. How do you know what to put in these candles to actually make them smell that way? Because it's incredible.
Yeah, I get that question a lot from people. And my answer is like, it happens like one of two ways. Sometimes I have the like concept for like a specific candle theme that I want to try to like match a scent to. So like that initial one, like when I started, you know, running the D&D game for the first time, I wanted something that smelled kind of like a haunted woodland with like notes of fir trees and kind of like, some like a more masculine scent. And so then I just started, we have a warehouse on our property, or like a shop on our property, that basically is what I run my business out of, which is super nice because I can just like walk to work.
Cool.
So I have, some people don't know much about the candle making process either, but they have just tons of different fragrances out there of all sorts of, you know, scents. And so I have like hundreds of those samples, and I have them categorized by like woodsy and smoky, or like, you know, fruity or floral or fall or winter. So I'll just grab from those and start like mixing things together. Sometimes I'll just like find one scent that works perfectly, but most of the time I'm usually blending like two, sometimes even three different fragrances.
Oh, wow.
Just because I want something that's a little bit more unique and like really hits the vibe, I guess, I'm going for with the candle. Sometimes it happens the opposite way, where it's like I have a scent that I really love, and I'm like, this fills a gap that like of a scent that I haven't done before, or something that people are requesting a lot of. So sometimes I'll try to like find a theme to fit the scent. That's what happened with like my Moon Blossom Tea House, which is one of my seasonal spring scents, and like people love that one. I love that one. It's like one of my all-time favorites. But I had like this idea of a scent that I wanted to do something with, like tea and maybe like a little bit of lavender, and like I found a coconut milk fragrance that I was like, oh, this would be really cool and unique. And so I kind of like made the theme to fit the scent.
Nice.
And that was awesome. What I was going to ask is if it's kind of back and forth, if you, because I know how I work, I tend to, even if, like, I run a homebrew pirate world, but if I'm feeling very inspired by Tolkien, then my next couple of sessions are going to feel very heavily leaning that direction, you know, or vice, you know, whatever. And so I was going to ask that, is your candle making still influenced by, hey, I'm DMing and my players are going to this location, but I don't have a scent for that? Does that kind of steer how you do, or now do you have a big enough portfolio of candles that it's kind of like you have something, you know, for every setting that you've encountered in your own games?
Yeah. I mean, my portfolio is pretty big at this point. There are some things that I'd like to fill in, but I have to try to figure out how to do it without like making those scents too similar to like something that I've already done at this point. But a lot of my scents have been inspired by my D&D game. So like I'm one of my campaigns that I'm running right now, all my players are members of a Thieves Guild. And so that's like where the Thieves Guild candle came from. And then I'm also running a Strixhaven campaign. And so my Arcane University scent was like kind of for that. But I was like, hey, other people play these campaigns too. And, you know, so I was like, that's why I'll just put them out there. And then, you know, other people can snag them for their games.
That's so fun. I literally walked into... What's that, Jeff?
Yeah, Jared, you
everybody talked about
I have a follow-up question to the Strixhaven thing that's not interviewing, like, or like anything. Like, I legit have a question about Strixhaven.
One of my best friends is moving, and I walked into their house the other day to help them pack some stuff and move a few things, and I walked in, and I was greeted by the scent of Thieves Guild. They had a burning in a corner of their house.
Heck,
and
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yes.
That's so good to hear. I love that.
It's a lot of fun.
Man.
Yeah, I have to echo.
Go, Charlie. Go.
I've been holding this in. But I have to echo what Jared said about the not just the quality of the, you know, what Jeff was saying about the scents and everything, and but also the quality of the ingredients and the wax and the chemicals that you use. Because I mean, when I did the last order, I really meant it, that like my wife and I, we love these candles, and her allergies are real sensitive to a lot of scents, and it can be so tough. Like, we'll go, you know, we'll find a candle that, you know, that we really like, and we'll start burning it, and especially if it's one that I really like, and then she goes and starts to like flare her allergies and a headache, and I'm just like, damn, I really wanted to, that was a good scent, but obviously we're not going to burn that. But with yours, we've burned so many of them and not one issue at all, and I can't tell you how awesome that is. And then at the same time, what's also really great about it too is I love to use candles and everything possible to make my sessions more immersive, especially for my paid games that I run. And so what's so nice is, since I've been using your candles, I don't have to worry or like preface of like, hey, anybody that's allergies are going to, if my wife can do them and no problem, I know everybody else is going to be fine. And so that's what I've been doing every session now. And it's been so much fun, and just add such a another layer that I can always have consistently, which is really nice.
Well, I really appreciated you like sharing that note with me when you placed your last order, because it's always like, as a candle maker and someone who worked in the wellness industry, super reassuring to hear. And like working in like health and wellness, like that's kind of what inspired me to like be really picky about my fragrances. So I have like certain criteria where I like won't use fragrances if they don't meet certain standards. And then same with like the wax. There's like, you know, a few other natural waxes out there, like soy wax is one a lot of people use. And it's not necessarily bad, but a lot of people have sensitivities to soy, and so can get headaches. And I actually like tested out some soy wax when I initially started, and I started getting a headache when I was working with it. I've had dozens of people, you know, reach out and say like, I usually have issues with candles and I don't with yours. And so, I'm always just like super excited when I hear that from someone else.
Yeah.
Do you have any, like, if you're going down to pick out a scent just for like average listening, or like you're reading a book, do you reading a book is a little leading to like towards something, but like if you're just hanging out and you want to relax, do you have a scent, like a go-to scent for you?
Moon Blossom Tea House is one of my favorites. I also really love my Realm of the Fae scent, which was like Feywild inspired. So those are some of my favorites. But honestly, I am like constantly testing candles. So I feel like if I have downtime, like I'm either testing a new scent or like retesting an old one or trying out a new wick or something, even though I like just always end up staying with my same wick, which is also reassuring. But
I mean, and listen, and Nicole, I think, has talked about this too, the like sound that the wood wicks make as they burn is lovely, especially when you're like sitting and reading, you know, it obviously while playing D&D, it's not really something I hear, but you know, I'm at my hobby desk and I'll oftentimes have a candle going as I'm painting a mini or doing whatever. And it just like, it's so peaceful.
Yeah, no, when I first started, I was like, I'm like wood wicks all the way. I never even like tested cotton wicks. I couldn't tell you a thing about them. But yeah, it's interesting. Like they have different types of wood wicks that crackle at like different intensities. So mine's called like a whisper wick. So it like crackles a little bit, but like not super loud. I didn't want to like annoy people.
That makes sense. I wouldn't have thought about that, but that totally mm-hmm. makes sense that that would be a thing.
Yeah.
You should do a run of like super loud ones, because I know I would buy at least like five or six. I love like fire crackling sound right next to my ear holes.
mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I can do like a campfire themed one.
There you
super
go.
Crackly.
Yeah.
I mean, story crafters, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Changing the subject a little bit, but something that you still do. Moth and marrow.
I was like,
good lord, how do you have so much time to do? Oh, well, maybe
I don't. That's the problem.
Really, yeah, you have to find a lot of things. How did that come about?
Well, I had seen some other people doing it, and I was like, I think I could do that, and I think I could do it really well. And so I was like, I'm just gonna go for it. So, probably a year ago now. Yeah, I just started getting some supplies and same thing. I was going to kind of just like do it for myself and friends and family, and then I'll go sell it like markets and stuff during the winter. And for the listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, I guess, I also make artwork with preserved butterflies and insects in like domes usually. And I'll like thrift like vintage bases and things like that. Yeah, so it's really fun. Yeah, all the butterflies and insects are beautiful. And
on that
when note, I first, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say real quick, this over the weekend, I did get a chance to, there's a thrift store down here in Virginia Beach. Jeff, you might know the antique mall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love to go there to look for D&D stuff whenever I get a chance, because you can, especially because one of my buddies said he was just there and he scored an adult blue dragon mini that happened to be there. Somebody had sold to the or found or whatever, and he got it for $15. I was like, crap. So I went over there to go check it, see what new stuff they had, and didn't have a lot of D&D, unfortunately, but I did get to go to one of my favorite holes that they have over there, which is like it's all the macabre curiosities and stuff like that. And the I can't remember the guy's name right now, and I feel terrible, but he's really cool. And we were just chatting everything, and he had just gotten a giraffe skull in.
What?
And so I got to hold it, and it was so cool.
How big was that?
It was huge, man. It was huge. It was like I would say at least like 24 inches. Long from it's the wild. Base of the skull to the nose at least. And it weighed, I would say it weighed like a good like 50 pounds.
Oh, I'm sure.
Jeez. Yeah.
That feels like you could hang it on the wall in a D&D room and just say, yeah, that's a dragon, and like never give other context and nobody would ever be able to tell the difference.
Yes. Look, when my wife and I get a house, I'm definitely going to furnish that D&D room with a good number of stuff from his place. He's got some really cool stuff.
That's so fun.
Casey, do you just like go out to like the side of the road and get like roadkill bugs? Like when you're like doing this?
No, I haven't started harvesting any roadkill yet.
More materials.
Yeah, like you just pick up your windshield. Like,
I will say this. When I was visiting home last weekend, my daughter found like a praying mantis. My dad found this like, you know, huge like bald hornet. He's like, you want to take these home? And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? I'll use them. So they sat in a little plastic cup, like in the car right on the way back. And I've like
feel like that's,
found some.
That's the equivalent of dumpster diving for crafting materials, you know?
Totally. Yeah. My daughter, it's really cute though, since I do typically like order like the specimens from different vendors, because a lot of them like aren't native to like where I live in Oregon.
Sure.
And so my daughter likes to look at them a lot though. And so she'll like ask if she can like touch them and things like that. And so also when we were home this last weekend, she was just like collecting piles of dead beetles. I'm like, what are you doing? doing.
Nice. The really fine line there between super cute and super creepy.
Yeah.
Hey, well, then she's just living her inner druid. Okay.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. She ended up putting like a live bug in her pocket and was like, "Mom, I'm scared." And I was like, "Why?" And she was like, "There's a live stink bug in my pocket." And I was like, "Why are you doing? What are you doing?"
So there are certain times. As a parent, that is just like, why was that said to me just now?
Yeah, I was like, we don't put live bugs in our pockets, okay?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a lesson we all have probably learned at some point in our life, so.
Yep.
That's incredible.
I really hope that's one of the clips that the AI pulls after this.
Yeah, right.
We have to figure out not to put a stink bug in our pocket.
Yep.
Well, you know, I do have to recognize, though, as a GM, what I'm hearing, the context of that situation is that your daughter rolled like a nat 20 on animal handling for the stink bug not to go off, putting it in her pocket.
Yeah. I think it was still alive when it came out too. So
yeah, that's a nat 20.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Mm. Man. That's something else. I was really hoping Nicole would be on by now.
Because
I was like, oh well. Oh gosh. Anyways, so you're playing Strixhaven and what did you say the other one was? I'm sorry.
I'm just running like a Thieves Guild campaign. I'm pulling like a few adventures from Keys from the Golden Vault, but it's homebrew.
Okay. How long have those been going on? And
I just like saw like an old memory pop up of the Strixhaven campaign, and that started 3 years ago. And then my Thieves Guild one started probably like 2 years ago. Okay. Yeah. Which are, I think, some of the longest campaigns I've played in. And I feel like you guys kind of play at a similar frequency to me. Like it's like, well, maybe not all of you, but it's like we play like once a month, usually like per game. Like obviously we all like want to play more than we get to.
Three times.
Yeah.
Last year I was running I think it was like four campaigns like every other week. Yeah. And now
I'm down to
one once a month and it sucks.
Yeah.
The most I've ever done is I played in a game that was weekly, and then on top of my game, which is bi-weekly, so I was playing like six times a month, basically. That was a lot of D&D.
Yeah.
I got burnt out real fast. I mean,
Yeah, so sometimes it's too much of a good thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like every other week is like the ideal, you know, of I can still do things, but it's still fresh enough that when you come, you know, we've been in a little bit of a rut with my game, but the last like five or six sessions we've had, I always do like a recap introduction thing, and sometimes I'll have the players do it, but every time now it's just like I'm just gonna read off what happened last time because it's been, you know, a month or a month and a half, and it's like nobody remembers what was going on, but that's the unfortunate realities of adulthood, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm lucky because I get to play in two campaigns also, and those have like different DMs and stuff. Nice. Like it's, you know, it ends up being like every, I don't know, week and a half I get to play, so it's not bad.
That's so funny.
Is that in your game room?
Yeah, one of them is. One of them DMs in here, and then the other one, my brother-in-law runs, and he just runs it at his house, so.
Oh, cool. It's nice.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite between DMing or being a player? Do you have like a preference, or is it kind of like the perfect balance of getting to do all the things?
Oh, I don't know. I love DMing. It's just obviously so time consuming. And like, obviously like one of my other hobbies is like, you know, printing and painting minis, and I've done like some terrain crafting and stuff. And so like, I like love having like my physical boards and being able to like throw out new minis and have people be like, whoa. But yeah, being a player is really fun too. One of my DMs is actually doing something interesting where he like kind of made our characters and had our character sheets, and we had to kind of like discover who our characters were as the game went on. And we'd like learn more about our stats and stuff. So we're still kind of like filling out our character sheet in a way, even though we're like 15 sessions in. So that's been fun because it's like a little more unique.
So much fun. I've heard of people doing that. I've never experienced it myself though, but
yeah.
That's really fun.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, I was just going to say, I feel like I saw a Strixhaven poster on your wall somewhere, Jeff. Yes. Was I seeing that right? Okay. Have you ever played it? Or
No. And that's why I have a question for you, because I was going to play it with a group of people. But then I was like starting to kind of read into it a little bit. And it's like, from what people were saying, it's more of a source book than an adventure. Is that true? Like, is there a story that goes with it? Or is it just like, here's the Harry Potter of D&D world?
There is a story. Ooh. And it sucks. I mean, personal opinion. It is really cool as a setting. And I have used like a lot of the story stuff they've come up with. Like I've incorporated it in different ways and like tweaked aspects of it. Like the big bad of the campaign, I turned kind of into like a year two big bad, because I had also read like a lot of people on Reddit talking about like how it's just very underwhelming, which it is. And there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense in how do they try to make things happen? Like, oh, the professors can't help you because there's like this weird thing that's going on. It's like, well, that doesn't make sense at all. Like, so anyways, I really love the setting, and I think you can have a really fun campaign with it. There's a lot of people who have like suggested making, they have like stat blocks for certain like villains in the back, but they don't really incorporate those villains much into the campaign. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people have like taken those villains and made them the big bad, which, if my players are listening, don't listen. That's what I'm doing. So I think you could make a really fun game out of it. I mean, our game has been super, super fun. But I've kind of like come up with a lot of it.
Is anyone playing Owlin?
Yes. My sister is.
Yes.
The Owlins are so cool.
Yeah, it's been really awesome. Yeah, that's and amazing. There's like, you know, the Owlin professors, and I don't know how much you guys know about Strixhaven, but it's like kind of related to Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
So that aspect's been really cool to see. Like, I've just started like getting back into Magic a little bit, but how like the different colleges are like connected to like kind of two of the Magic colors, so like, you know, green and black or red and blue.
That's cool.
And those kinds of things.
That's so fun. Exciting.
Are you playing Commander?
I just played Commander for the first time last weekend, although I'm kind of like pulling apart my Commander decks to make some Standard decks. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I've been being pulled left and right on by a couple people to start playing Commander. I was like, I don't know if I can get into a card game right now.
Yeah, I know. I told my husband I was buying some Magic cards, and he's like, wow, another hobby you really need. And I was like, I know.
So, I've avoided it so far. My biggest temptation with Magic was when, like a year or two ago, when the Lord of the Rings series came out. I was like, this is when it's going to happen. And I made it out the other side unscathed, but there's still plenty of time.
I used to play back 2008 timeframe-ish. And that was the last time I really played, and I haven't played since. So I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to do that again.
My heart wants to tell me that 2008 was only a couple years ago, but yep.
Guys, it wasn't.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to stick to Magic and Pokemon just for collecting for the art, and because I used to play competitively for Yu-Gi-Oh. Back in the day, but I think I got like my fill with all of that then, and I'm like, I don't want to dip my toes back in, because then it's just going to be an ADHD hyperfixation and I need all my time for D&D, so
this is how I feel about Daggerheart right now too, because obviously Daggerheart is like becoming huge, and I have several friends who are like, we should try it out, and I'm like, I literally just don't think I can commit to something else right now. As much as I want to.
I brought it up to my table. I was like, how do you guys feel about this? Like, they're like, okay, what's the difference? I was like, you roll 2 d12s and all, or 4 out of the 5 went, nope, I'm out.
That's hilarious. I have a good friend who's going to like end their season or their story arc in D&D and then actually pick up the same stories with new characters or some of the same characters in Daggerheart and like continue the story but switch game systems, which I think is interesting. Be something different to try. But
game I played in when the OGL scandal was going around a couple years ago. The if y'all remember that was a fun time. The DM was like, guys, do we just want to switch over to Pathfinder and just keep the same story going? I was like, oh man, maybe it's a little bit more intense, but maybe. And we ended up not doing it, but it's fine. Homebrew and D&D is
that's what I've said several times. My homebrew games are probably kind of an abomination to D&D purists because I pulled in so many rules and thrown out so many rules that it's like we're all at my table on the same page and we all have a good time, but it's not really D&D at its core. Rules as written, it's not the thing, but that's all right.
I take a lot of wargaming aspects of it and actually translate it to, especially for like boss fights. Because it's oftentimes like there's like five players versus one bad guy. So I kind of give them like a little bit extra stuff that they can do that kind of fall in lines with like wargaming techniques and stuff.
Sure.
But
makes sense.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Casey, what were you about to say?
No, you're good. Subject changed a little bit, but I know you had said you were really into Star Wars, and one of the first campaigns that I played in that was like a long-term one was a Star Wars campaign.
Was it the actual RPG?
So I'm not sure. It wasn't D&D. It was called like Force and Destiny, which is I'm trying to think if I don't think I have the books out. Does Fantasy Flight game sound right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantasy Flight. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, my friend who's he's DMing one of the games that I play, and he ran that game for us, and we used that system, and I loved it. Like that system was so cool. They ended up being out like the Genesis, which is like the more like basic version, and the first games that I was actually running when I like started my candle business was like with that system. And it was really fun. But I heard you talking about that like on an episode recently that you were looking for this one. I was like, oh, I played a really fun Star Wars system that you should try.
That's super cool. I've got a couple players and some friends that want to play a Star Wars RPG. And I think I would run the official one. I've listened to a podcast where they do an actual play of Nicole will be on in five. Fantastic. So they wanted to do a Star Wars one, and I listened to a podcast for some friends that I used to play games with, and it sounded so freaking cool. Like it was a D12 system, but the checks and stuff you could like add like tech bonuses, I think, and stuff like that. And then there was mechanics for lightsabers and blasters and actual space travel mechanics too. I was like, oh, that's really cool looking at you, Spelljammer. It was so cool. And I was like, I really want to play this. And that's cool. Did you guys have a good time? Like what, I have so many questions. Was it set in the High Republic, the Galactic Republic, the Clone Wars? Like when did this thing take place?
Okay. Let me just say, I feel like you guys were talking in a recent episode about how like new people playing D&D are like, I don't even know what I can do. Like what are the options? That's how I felt because they all were like super into Star Wars and they're like throwing out all this like ship mechanic terminology. And I'm just like, I didn't even know that was a part of a ship. So, So I wish I could go back because I've kind of been binging a lot of the Star Wars stuff. Like it's what I've been watching. I'm just like watching some of the new shows and like rewatching some of the old movies. Like while I've been working on my like insect art.
There's so good background stuff.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah. So I'd love to like go back and like play again because a lot of it would like click a little bit more now. But yeah, I'm trying to think. Yeah, we were like helping the rebels out and I think we might have been on like Yavin at one point. So I don't, so like wherever that fits into the Star Wars.
You are right there. That is like right prime in between episode 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there you go.
So now pressure's on though. Do you have a favorite movie or show in Star Wars?
Yeah, I just watched Andor. That was kind of like what restarted my interest in it. And that was so good. I loved
Andor. Yeah, season 1 and 2. Excellent.
Didn't I see like Andor got like half a dozen like award nominations or something?
I think so.
A lot, right?
It is.
I haven't seen it yet. I
think episode 8 from season 2 was, I think it was like the most watched television show in history. Mm. Across the board, I forget. It was in the top 10 or something like that. Like that's including like super old shows, stuff like that. Like within that episode going live, and don't quote me on that, or tell us in the comments one or the other how wrong I am. But
now you're putting it on sending this audio clip right to Disney.
yeah. I just
emailed Disney. What you gonna do, Mouse?
That's funny.
But,
So was Andor a favorite then, or is that just kind of what lit the fire and got you back in?
It's probably like one of my favorite of the Star Wars universe, like movies and TV shows. If I have to pick a movie, I don't know. It's probably controversial. I really like episode 2. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's my son's favorite as well. Yeah.
What are your guys' favorites?
Oh,
who's up there?
So if I had to pick across the whole entire franchise, honestly, it's the animated Clone Wars series.
I need to watch that. Final, everyone tells me it's so good.
The last half of the last season of Clone Wars is maybe the best television that exists. Especially in parallel, you know, no spoilers. Especially in parallel with episode 3 of Star Wars is just like
so good.
Absolute cinema.
I don't know.
It's so hard. I love 3 simply because it puts everything into motion so well for the originals. I super love Rogue One, and I know that a lot of people are like so on it, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Like I love that they took we're going to go on such a deep tangent here. I love that they took something as simple as in A New Hope saying that the rebels somehow acquired the plans to this, you know, super weapon and were able to build out this whole story of how that came to be and have you grow attached to characters that you know you're never really going to see again, you know, moving forward. And it's so good. The acting is excellent, because this is like, I love Star Wars through and through, but like there's some questionable script choices along the way. But Rogue One, I feel like, is actually super well written and well acted, and you know, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
And the end scene with Vader in the hallway. Mm-hmm. It's hard to you know, dismiss that.
Yeah. Mine is Return of the Jedi.
Mm.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My favorite character is Luke, like ever. I've read most of his books, like and stuff like that. Like I
didn't know Luke wrote books.
Yeah, he wrote a bunch of books actually. Yeah, he wrote a whole lot of books. Yeah. Just shut up.
As I said in the last episode, sometimes it's best just to not acknowledge the things that I say. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, oh gosh, that's so good. So the Star Wars class or the Star Wars game, I do want to ask, was it like a class based system? Because then I wanted to follow up into what is your favorite D&D class and why?
Oh gosh.
And what does it say about you and how do you feel about that?
Okay. Well, first question was Star Wars. That system, it did have classes, but what I loved the way you could like sort of level up in it. Basically you got like experience points to spend and you like would get them every session. So it was kind of nice. You could like save them up for like bigger things or smaller things. And if you want, you could like buy.
That's cool.
Yeah. You could buy like basically another class within your, well, you could buy like another subclass basically within your overarching class, which was cool. So, and then you also had like your individual skills. So, you know, like if it were D&D, it'd be like, you know, sleight of hand or athletics and stuff. And you had like 5 basically like ways you could level that up. And so you could like spend your XP to like level up a specific skill. And then also like in that system, you could buy different like force abilities and level those up.
Oh.
Hey.
Yay! Oh. We made it! Look at this. Yay. We're all here.
Look at this. We're all here. For everybody listening, Nicole just joined in. Welcome to the show, Nicole. How are you doing tonight? How are the emotions? How are you?
Okay, well, I'm good. I'm here. It's been a long day. That's why I'm wearing my glasses, because my eyes are completely shot from just like not sleeping good last night, waking up early this morning. It's first day of kindergarten for my oldest child. So it's been a day, but now we're here. It was a good day. It was a really good day. It went great. She had a blast. She's excited to go back tomorrow.
Good.
Yeah, that's
good,
awesome.
Good.
That's awesome.
This is your 2-year-old?
This is the 5-year-old, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's exciting, but yeah. Sorry, rough day.
Yeah.
Mine goes in 2 weeks, Nicole. I will be in the same boat. I'm gonna be like, no one talk to me, no one look at me.
Yeah,
shut up, okay.
The feels are big with kindergarten. I don't know. Jared, did you have that? The kindergarten feels?
We just started school yesterday. My kids are now in fourth and fifth grade. So now I'm staring down the barrel of like, they're, you know, almost a high school in my mind now, even though they're like 9 and 10 years old. So no, it never goes away, at least in my experience. I mean, kindergarten is probably up there because it's like the first, but I don't feel like it ever stops being weird. So who's to say?
Well, great. I'm so excited to have 13 years of that to look forward to.
Yeah. At least now you know you're just staring down the barrel of, you know, anxiety.
Now I know what's coming for me.
Anyway, Casey, back to you. We've been talking about Star Wars, and Jeff posed the question of what, Casey, is your favorite class to play in D&D?
Ooh. Yeah, I feel like I always lean towards Warlock or Rogue, which I feel like Rogue is like everybody's favorite, but that's not true. I've been playing a Bard lately too, and I'm enjoying playing Bard, but I like something that has like the combo of a little bit of melee, a little bit of spell casting. I feel like Warlocks typically are a little bit like morally gray, and so those are fun characters to play. So I'd probably say Warlock if I had to pick my favorite class.
So fun.
Love it. Those are fun ones.
Yeah. Didn't you guys give yourselves classes a while ago? I can't remember.
We did. Many things with it too.
We need to actually do something with those because we had a plan for that.
Yes. Yeah.
I was a ranger and I would just like to officially double down on that now because rangers are way cooler in the 2024 rules.
Yes.
And
yes.
So having just played through all of Baldur's Gate as a ranger. Rangers are awesome. I think they should get more love. Specifically, which it's not even what I played in Baldur's Gate, specifically the subclass Ranger Knight, because then it's kind of like you get kind of the best of both worlds. You get a little bit of casting. You can shoot with a bow. You have a sword. It's Aragorn. I'm describing Aragorn, and that is, at the end of the day, who doesn't want that?
That's what we all want to be, right?
Yeah. In all of its forms and fashions.
Yeah.
Nicole,
what were the rest of you?
Nicole, what were you again?
I was like a druid bard. I think I multi-classed. I don't know. Yeah. Y'all, that was a long time ago.
That was episode one. We need to go back and watch her.
A lifetime ago.
Yeah.
That is correct. Which I think is, again, now, you know, this will be episode 16. This many episodes in. I think that's correct. Mm-hmm. I think you would be a druid bard.
Yeah, that feels right for me.
Yeah. Charlie, what were you again?
Paladin.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're very kind. Hopefully for the right reasons. I agree though. I think like that's usually what I tend to gravitate towards is like you were saying, Casey, like quarter or half casters, because I like the versatility and having different things to pull from. And paladins are just one of my favorite just half casters, arguably quarter casters depending on the subclass, but I just love the versatility of being able to do like anything and everything in a situation rather than just being stuck to one role. So
I think there's something to be argued for playing a charisma based class as well, mm-hmm. especially if you are charismatic person at the table, to be able to then back that up with, you know, higher probability successes on your rolls is always nice.
Also, I will say, I think it needs to happen more, is some of my best big bads and enemy NPCs are paladins, and they kick ass against Saber, man. I'm just saying. I have one that a group last year got to encounter. His nickname is the Jackal, and basically,
you talked about him.
He's a level 10 paladin with the ability. He has the shadow touched, and so he can go invisible, mm-hmm. and it's just devastating. He just went in and just killed. Yeah, he just came in invisible and killed one of the players outright in the first round. And it happened to be their druid. And so he was the one that was doing a lot of the healing for the party, and it just absolutely just dropped him. Mm-hmm. So
brutal.
More big bad paladins. That's what I would like to see there in the D&D world.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I went. It's a warlock cleric, so kind of a very, very contradicting class. But I feel like it. I still feel like that fits me.
Yep. So, yeah. Clerics do have my favorite subclass, which is the Death Domain cleric. That is so good.
Yeah.
That is a lot of fun to play.
Nicole, what were you going to say?
What was I going to say? I don't know.
I don't know. You said, I think.
I cut you off. I'm so sorry.
I was going to say that I think we need to know more about your character and the god or gods that he serves.
Mine?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's... No, I wasn't prepared for this.
It doesn't have to be today. I'm just saying, like, cleric and warlock. Like, it's a very, like, deity-centric combo.
If I had to give you an answer right now, it's a cleric and warlock based in my world, not in an official D&D world, because gods confuse me in, like, lore stuff in general, because there's so many. But... for mine, there's a character called the Time Turner, which is kind of like a think it's really dumb sounding, but in context it's really cool. Think like Master Glove from Super Smash Brothers, like the original one. He's got like that hand, right? It's like this like void hand orb thing that is basically my catch-all for when players aren't at sessions and stuff. Like, it like swoops people in and out of different timelines and drops them in for different adventures that they go on, and if they like miss a session, like I can text them like the day before, be like, come with a quick like paragraph of what the Time Turner did with you, as you know, like you're doing a bunch of stuff because you weren't at that session. And it's also a way that I can keep two of my friends that can't play with us all the time still involved in why they aren't at sessions, even though they're still in the party technically. So it's just a cop out essentially for,
I think that's kind of genius actually,
but because it's neither good nor bad, it falls under both deity and demon. So mm-hmm. it works for a cleric and a warlock to both.
There you go.
Go for it.
That's so, what we needed.
It's a very sleep token answer, by the way.
It's having a little scapegoat to explain away why players aren't there is great. Like, this is one of the reasons I love playing pirate campaign, because if they're mm-hmm. not on the ship, then I can just say they're on the ship, you know, or I can just say they're below deck and asleep, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Now, I was thinking about this, Jeff, when you were talking about it, and Nicole, you had posed a question of what god or gods that his character would follow. Now I want to make an NPC who is a cleric and a warlock, but they worship two opposing deities, and they're essentially like the parent, or they're the kid between two divorced parents, and just trying to like struggle and maintain that peace between them.
I think what you're describing is playing Parent Trap. And you're just bringing the two deities back together.
There you go.
And really, it was two people the whole time. Not, you know, it wasn't one kid. It was spoilers.
That's a good idea for a campaign setting. The parent trap. You're getting two deities back together.
It's actually hilarious. But so here's a question that I asked when we had the lovely folks at Jumpin' Jack's Tavern on. So I will pose it to you, Casey, and I'll continue to ramble so you can think about it a little bit. If you could sit at the table of any person, fictional or real, throughout all of history and have them be your DM, who would you choose? So my example that I gave them and I'll give now is like Robin Williams, I think would just be incredible. Like Anne of Green Gables would just be fantastic. You know, so descriptive in everything. Obviously, there's like Tolkien and all these wonderful people. Nicole, I don't know if you were here when I posed that question, so I'd love to hear your answer also, but obviously, you know, you two other guys can answer too, but less interesting.
While you're thinking about it, I gave the answer for me so you can think. Because this is a good question, because your mind is going to change multiple times. As you get episode 10, I think, or 11 was that one. And you can hear us like verbally be like, no, wait, I changed my mind. Like,
yeah, I listened to that episode. It. Yeah. And when you asked that, I was like, I wonder who mine would be. And then I was like, I have no idea. No, I think I did come up with like one or two, but.
I still stick with Edgar Allan Poe.
That's
for me.
Such a good answer.
That's who I would like to go in a gothic themed campaign where like it's got the murdered out room, the murder candles, like everything going on. You're just in there, a little raven, you know, in the or whatever a raven sounds like. I can't do a raven screech, but I don't know. Maybe I'll do one in post.
please do just. After the music fades out at the end, can we just have like 5 minutes of you just trying to do raven noises?
Subscribe to our Patreon if you want that exclusive content.
It's going to all just come out sounding like chickens. What the hell is happening?
So, Casey.
I'm thinking I know I had a second one when I thought about it the other day and I can't remember what it was. Okay, but my first one, I don't know if any of you have like read or listened to the Dungeon Crawler Carl series. Okay.
Once.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, my husband's been really into it and so I've been listening to it and it's super fascinating, but I think Matt Dinneman is the author, and he, like, I don't know how he comes up with the crazy stuff he comes up with in those books. And so I was like, oh, to have him like DM a game, it would be crazy and so interesting. But yeah, I'm trying to think. I feel like there's like a setting. I can't remember what it was.
That is, I find, what is so interesting, because it is kind of like Poe versus, you know, like Tolkien are wildly different things, but you might have the same level of quality, but it's, you know, two sides of a different. So I feel like it's also very telling. Jeff is dark and brooding and I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm just kind of blanking.
I know. Yeah, I don't know. This is a hard one. I feel like I'm going in really separate directions, but I kind of like where both of them are leading my mind. One of them is almost like a Tim Burton-esque, just like very like creepy, but not like scary, just like spooky, fun, cutesy. And the other one, I guess, y'all are going to just probably hate me for this, but like, I don't like Sarah J. Maas.
Okay, I was thinking that also.
You were going to say like Prithia or something.
You're not wrong.
World builder, like that.
Yeah. It would be.
Nicole, so. I have to press you even further. Which series of hers?
Which one do I like best, or which one would I want her to draw inspiration from? I think the answer is the same either way. Definitely Throne of Glass.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
Best one.
I'm on the second ACOTAR series.
Okay.
I'm on the second one. Yeah. They're good.
Throne of Glass is better, I think.
That's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
Everybody. Yeah. I've thought about this since, and I think what I would like to do would be Stephen King.
No, sure. Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, dude. Yes, I would dude.
If not.
Yep.
Oh, Charlie, can we play a gunslinger themed campaign?
Yeah.
That actually almost fits your world, to be honest with you, dude. Fits your world. Well, like,
honestly, the other one I was thinking too is like it would be so much fun to have him like run like the beginning of like I'm thinking of Cell, the book Cell, if you guys have read that. And like that would be like the beginning of the origin of the Adventures After an Arcane Apocalypse when everything's like really going down.
Dude.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you have any seats open at your game?
I do, actually. I do.
Do you really? Ooh, I'm going to text you, dude. I'm going to text you.
Which,
Charlie, I got too excited, bud.
Visual that those of you listening, Charlie's camera just fell. And,
I did want to mention, by the way, speaking of the game, the last two sessions, Casey, I've been burning. Which one is? Oh, it's a Dungeon Delve and Twisted Caverns.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I've been burning those together. Right now, my players in that campaign, they made it to I have a city called Chikatoshi, which is Japanese for underground capital. And it's a city that like about 400 years ago, the Ring of Fire was tapped into for a very dark ritual, and it caused massive devastation with the tectonic plates and everything. And essentially a good sized chunk of Tokyo was about to be engulfed by magma. And so a bunch of very powerful magic users were able to protect it. But by doing so, they increased the density of the city, and it caused it to plummet 2 miles below the surface. And to further protect it, they had to keep everything rapidly cool because of all the magma. And so it ended up creating and encapsulating the city in a 3 mile wide geode. And so the city just, that's where they sit. And so I've been, those two scents are just like so perfect because the way the city sits, it's, you know, it's inside a geode, but there's water down below, and there's like these, they've been, what's the word I'm looking for? Can't think of it, but they've been basically, manipulating the plant life to create massive lily pads and mangrove trees within the geode, and so those two scents have just been really perfect.
Are you bringing them at the same time or?
Yeah.
Ooh, I haven't tried those two together yet, actually. So
yeah. Yeah. I've been especially with the tea light candles, I've been playing around with those and like combining some of the scents for some of the different areas that I have my sessions in. And it's been a ton of fun.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I also got to listen to your lore episode about your world, which was crazy.
Yeah.
It feels like we always say it when you're not here, so I'll say it to your face. Every time I think I'm creative, then I listen to you talk about your world building, and I'm like, I could improve. I can improve still.
Yeah, I'm like, are you just thinking about this like 24/7 nonstop? Because I do not know how your brain does all that.
Yeah. Okay. That is an accurate statement. I've got like, I don't know, at this point, over 100 pages on various Google Docs and so notebooks and just all kinds of stuff that everything is in. So
when did you start working on this? Like how long ago?
So it's actually really funny. The idea of this entire world happening in this like apocalyptic warfare was a dream that I had. And I just like, couldn't stop thinking about it. I thought it was like just really cool. And then I was like, what if I made a homebrew world, because I've been wanting to make a homebrew setting for a while to run a campaign for my wife and friends. And I was like, but I couldn't think of one that really felt right, because they just all are sometimes, to me, a lot of D&D settings, no offense to them, just a lot of them seem to be very homogenous in the published settings. And, you know, I look at Earth and it's so diverse and rich and different and varying. And I was like, I want a world that's the same way. And I was like, well, what about if it's just Earth, you know, 500 years in the future, and with all this stuff? And I just got hooked and I couldn't stop. And but that was probably like 3 years ago now. Okay. Maybe, yeah, I would say that, around that.
Mm. Yeah. I'm going to be straight up mad if it never gets published. Like, you have to publish it. And I want to, like, I want... I want all the like campaign setting published and how to run games like you published. And then I want some like little background novels that go with it that I can read to learn more about it. Like, yes. I want all of it.
Yeah. I've got so much, there's so much there. And, 100%. I plan, there's going to be a monster manual. There's going to be, one for all the custom, items. 'Cause I have so many custom item, magical items that I've made, for this. And so there will be a whole thing in that, but also how to like suggestions and ways to homebrew stuff to kind of go with it. And, I've come up with some like custom mechanics and stuff to kind of, it's a lot. I could go on forever. I don't want to dominate this. But yeah, I was
Charlie's Lore Part 2. Tune in episode 17. Just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. That was a fake advertisement. I hopped in late, so maybe y'all already did this, but did we already talk about our favorite scents yet?
No.
Okay, we all need to say our favorite scent then.
Right now, I have it right here. It's Verdant Jungles. I absolutely love it. It's
trying to remember. See, now you've put me on the spot.
Oh boy!
The first one that you sent me, I forget, is the woodland something.
Yeah, Enchanted Woodland.
Enchanted Woodland. That one is so good. It's I kept the glass and I turned it into another paint pot holder.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
It's holding my nice brushes instead of my
crappy
ones, so I know which ones are different.
That's a great idea.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is
burning right now, which is excellent. And that's a frequent flyer for my seafaring campaign. I think my favorite, I'm pretty sure it was Town Square that I got. Yeah. And it was, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. I think it was my favorite candle I've ever experienced, though.
Okay, I'm going to have to buy that one because I don't think I've gotten that one yet.
I almost got that one in the last order. I was like, I was reading the description because isn't that like, I hate, Casey, I hate to put you on the spot. I know you have so many.
Oh, candles, you're good. No, I can tell you.
Isn't like notes of bread and tobacco?
Yeah, yep. Leather, warm bread, yeah, a little bit of wood smoke and smoked meat.
Yes, I was like, that is amazing.
That sounds so good.
I absolutely love that.
It's very, it's like a very hearty scent. So like you'll smell like the smoked meat and like the pepper. So yeah, be ready for that.
Yeah, what meat is a good way to describe it. Yeah, it's kind of almost like a spicy, I don't know. It was excellent. It was very unique.
Good.
And I loved it. So
Yeah. Jeff, you asked what the inspiration for it was.
No, what meat was the inspiration?
Oh, what meat was the inspiration? Meat?
Was it a brisket? Is it a rack of ribs? Are we talking chicken? Like, what are we talking here?
You know, I'm not sure, but all I know is it is actually like a peppered smoked meat. So whatever it is, a little bit of pepper in there.
There you go. you said smoked meat or smoked meat. And I went, dang, I could go for a steak right now.
I also have to say, on that note, Casey, that the scents, like sometimes when I'm looking at candles and like I'll read like, you know, if we ever go to like Home Goods or something and I read like the scent description on the candle, sometimes it's like, that's really ambitious. I don't know how you're going to put all those together. And or it'll be like, you know, it's like this note of something. And then it's just like way too artificial and strong, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that one, your scents are always really complex in a way that is actually like you can smell it and you feel it, but nothing is too overpowering. And then at the same time, again, kudos to you for like how the quality of the stuff that you use, because never have I smelled anything and it smelled like really artificial or, you know, I hate to keep using that word, but really artificial and just cheap, you know, it's always just really, really good.
Thank you.
Also what it's supposed to smell like Verdant Jungles. It says leafy fern and fresh rain. And it actually is. Sometimes I'll smell a candle and they'll be like rain after a sunset. And it's such an ambiguous scent. Because really, you know, after it rains, it really depends a lot of times the place, you know. After it rains at a trash yard is going to, well, smell like a trash yard.
It's like the monster's body spray. This one's a wet dog.
Yeah. Whereas like this, like I smell it and I'm like, it does feel like a jungle after it's rained.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I obviously don't want my candles to smell bad, but like I'm also not going for like the best smelling candles. I'm going for like the most immersive candles that still smell good.
That makes them the best smelling candles.
I would argue that you have.
Yeah, and they're I haven't smelled one yet that I was like, ugh. You know, like I think they all smell really good, but they're also like interesting. Like the scents are complex, feel like I don't know. That's not usually what I end up getting when I buy other candles. So it's really good.
Yeah.
Is there like a scent profile that has been like your white whale that you just quite haven't been able to capture yet that you're really like working towards? Or do you feel like, I mean, obviously there's infinite combinations and possibilities that you'll continue to explore, but is there one that you just haven't gotten to dial in yet?
I will say one that was really hard was, there's actually kind of two. There's one that I was trying to get like a metal kind of iron steel sort of scent for my Dwarven Halls candle. And I feel like I actually did a good job like finding something that incorporated that in. But that one was really hard. The one I ended up going with kind of has like that sweet tinge to it. I don't know. And I feel like that was very reminiscent of like the metal smell. So that one was pretty tricky.
Moria. Like when I smell that one, it makes me think of Moria.
Nice. Well, that's what I was going for. So good. The other one, I wanted to incorporate some sort of like mushroomy like scent into something. And I was like looking everywhere for some sort of like, you know, mushroom, fungi, lichen, I don't know, type fragrance. And I have not, one company that I use a lot of their fragrances just put one out. And it was like after I had finished my Enchanted Woodland scent and like kind of solidified that. That's when I was thinking about using it in. I was like, ah, come on. So I don't know. That might be something I do in the future, but.
Let me know because I've got a druidic lich that when people fight them, I think that would be the perfect candle for.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
It is. I know we've kind of already talked about this, but it is truly like that missing element of when you get all those senses going for your players. It truly like brings it to the next level of, you know, you can have the visuals, you can have the music, but having the smell, it truly like transports you to a different place. Like it is pretty wild. It was not truly until Firelight, it was not something that I had introduced in my games. And it truly like all of my players have commented on it. Half of them I think have bought candles, and it's just like it is worth it, worth every penny. Do it.
I've tried a few. And again, it's like, you know, you run into the issue of like, ooh, hey, my head's starting to hurt. And that takes somebody entirely out of the session. Like that sucks. And it's, I don't know, the last two sessions in particular, I've been able to just light the tea light candles and start the session. It's just been such a great flow. It's been awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. Outside of the scent side of immersion, I was curious, like, what are some of your guys' favorite ways to like immerse your players? Like, are there certain like senses that you usually try to immerse more than others, or things you lean towards?
Snacks.
So I love snacks.
Yeah, food always.
Yeah. That's, again, I think, Nicole, no, I think this is what I said last time you brought up food. I go, that's the correct answer.
Snacks is always the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
I love using audio. I use Pocket Bard quite a bit, and I have used Monument Studios a fair amount. Shout out Monument Studios. But I love being able to kind of, like, I don't even have it in your face, but like Pocket Bard specifically has a lot of spell sounds and stuff, and I kind of like to be able to press those as I'm describing something, and, you know, half the players might not even register that it's happening, but it brings me joy to think, like, there's some, you know, and it feels more immersive. I don't have a dedicated game. I mean, I have a game table, but it just kind of sits in like the living room area of my basement. So lighting is tricky, but I have started playing a little bit more with specific lighting, but it's still kind of a work in progress. But that's kind of my next frontier of, you know, immersion is lighting. But
yeah, I pretty much only use Monument Studios. Yeah, definitely go check them out too. They're amazing. But because I like curating my own playlist for that, so I've got different one shots, because you can pull in one shots to them too. So I've got like different songs and different sound effects for all the different environments that I use, and have them mapped to different things, so I can just click it and it just changes everything. But I am really big on lights. So my game table has LED, like color changing LED lights under it as well too. So what I kind of do that I think some of my players have finally picked up on. So I've got a two multi-changing colors up in the ceiling that change colors based on the environment that we're on. But I'll change the color of the table to whatever the, like, if they're at a boss fight, to Mortal Kombat style.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It starts red, it goes red, orange, yellow, light green, dark green, and they know when they're on dark green that they're almost killing it. So it takes, I don't have to then be like, he's looking real hurt, you know, blah blah blah, the whole, like, one or two more hits. But then it puts this like visual twist in the player's mind that, like, it's like, wait, maybe I don't want to heal you right now because I might be able to get the, how do you want to do this, because I know that it's green, meaning, and so it's got this, like, I'm hoping that that's, they've, I think some of them have noticed it, they like keep looking on the bottom, like where the light shines, so they're like, what the heck, and it'll change.
Is just mess with them and have it go green way sooner. When it still has like 100 health.
I have a few I think I do this every episode. For my players, if you know, you actually do listen to this show, you do get the inside scoops. I am gonna start incorporating like shield health, basically. So instead of giving them, or like instead of, and then like doing like phase fights and stuff like that, which, like, you know, Dark Souls style, where like it goes to next health bar and blah blah blah.
What you need to do is you need to make one of them a paladin one time, so that when they get to green, they do lay on hands on themselves and go back to red, and they'll be like,
oh. Wow. Yeah, that would piss some people off. Oh man, Charlie, you have quite the arsenal of stuff you get to use for your games.
Yes. So one of the things I'm very grateful for doing my paid games with Rogue Game Masters is I get access to all of their terrain, and they have like arguably it's got to be like the, I don't know, the biggest private Dwarven Forge collection on the East Coast. Like it's massive.
It's a lot.
I just got to play with the new set that he got in from one of the Kickstarters, where it's the dockside terrain with like the houses on the stilts and the docks. So much fun. And it was good because, you know, my city, Chicotoshi, the down, you know, on the bottom of the geode above the water, there's a lot of stuff that, and a lot of people that live right there, and on the giant lily pads too and stuff. So it was great. It was a great excuse to get to play around with this. So I love using terrain, but the other thing I love doing, especially for my paid games that don't go through Rogue Game Masters, like at conventions, sometimes we don't do them through that, or my home games with friends and family, I really love using
physical items. So creating maps and making different tokens and finding, you know, thrifted stuff to repurpose and use. One thing I got to use actually in this last game, and I wanted to give them a shout out, is this company Weirdworks. They make this fantasy cyberpunk tarot card set. And one of my players got to go meet an NPC that I have called Madame Oni. And she's a tarot card reader and psychic. And because it's kind of like this, you know, kind of futuristic cyberpunk kind of element to it in this city, that's the tarot card deck that I used for it to do the tarot card reading, and my players absolutely loved it. And I just wanted to like showcase like some of the art.
It's so pretty.
And my players were just absolutely losing their mind. And it's like it's a full tarot card set, so it's 78 cards. And like this is the back of it, and I think is my favorite part. And I wish I could have like a big print of it framed, but it's a like this like cyberpunk skeleton beholder. It's so cool.
That's really
cool. But that's something that I really like to do is have like physical things to present to the players and be like, you know, this is like Madame Oni pulls out the tarot cards and she pulled some to you, pulled them out. And so my players got to do that, and we got to do the actual tarot card reading based on what she pulled and with the actual cards. And it makes it so much more immersive when you get to actually interact with those physical elements. And that's my favorite way.
Yeah, I love that. I love tarot, and I try to incorporate tarot readings into my games as much as possible. Like my players know, most of my players are kids, by the way, but they know, like, if you go into a new town, there will be somebody who's at least an amateur tarot reader that will be like, can I give you a free reading?
Yes.
It's like almost, it's almost like a joke in my games at this point. People are like, where's the tarot reader? What are you going to try to do this time?
That's hilarious. That's circling back briefly, and I won't belabor it, but I went to Gen Con just for a day, and I hilariously, so I met the Weather Dragon first and foremost.
Yeah, awesome. Mike,
beautiful man. Table. Yeah, met Mike, he's incredible. So we were talking about you, Charlie, but then I had the funniest thing where I met, and it is it Chris Rogue Game Masters, right?
Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. Chris, yeah,
had a just a huge ran into him, met him, we kind of, he looked at me, he's like, I think I know you from somewhere. He goes, were you at PAX? I go, no, I wasn't at PAX, because he was at oh gosh, I forget the booth. He was working at one of the booths. Yeah. And somehow we did not make the connection of who he was or I was until I left and got home and I opened up Instagram. I'm like, that's the guy. So, oh my gosh, that's Chris. So then I messaged him. I'm like, we met, funny. But we actually didn't know who each other was. So that's my,
that's funny.
My quick funny story is I met Chris, sort of.
You just didn't know you were meeting Chris. Dude, that's
right. So yeah. We were just both that's unaware hilarious. That we were meeting each other, but. What can you do?
That's really funny, man. Oh, that's gosh. That's good.
So, Nicole, anyway, yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, Nicole, since you came in late, did you have any other questions that you wanted to ask Casey before we have like a one or two more things?
Put you on the spot.
Like, I'm sure I do, but now often. My brain just went like,
yeah, she had 100 before Jeff asked if she had any. So
I know how it goes. Well,
I got a question. I always like to ask people what is your favorite like D&D memory? Whether it was a moment at the table in combat or with an NPC or something with your character, or you know, interaction with a god or what? Like what is like a moment that is just like this legendary moment to you at the D&D table in all of the sessions you've played? And again, it doesn't even have to be at you as a player, but you as a DM too. Like I totally get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can think of like three specific ones. Two of them I cried at, so you know, pretty epic. Yeah. one of them, I was also the DM for this one, so, and I did cry at it, but I had run a game probably 5 years ago that we only played about like 7 or 8 sessions in. My sisters were both in it, and they had these really cool characters. In my homebrew world, there's this place where it's like basically like a drow society. And, okay. And so they play these super cool characters. We had all this really cool stuff happen. And then we stopped playing that campaign and didn't play. We actually haven't like played since, but we've always like talked about some of the stuff that might have gone on, and we'll probably like pick it up at some point. But in my Thieves Guild campaign recently, we brought one of those characters in as like she basically had like taken on the form of one of their like previous guild members in order to like get them to help her infiltrate this place and like find this specific item. And so there were just like lots of little tidbits that I was dropping in like session after session about like weird things she would do that her character had done in the past, but it obviously like didn't look like her because she was disguising herself. And like there were these specific weapons that this like drow battalion that they were in had, and like they interacted with that at one point. And so it all just kind of like culminated into this point where she like, they got into this vault where this item was that she needed, and like she kind of was like revealed in a way. And so my sister was just like, oh my gosh. And then there were like all these other things tied in where we had one of my other players, there's so much backstory that I won't go into it, but long story short, she had basically accidentally like killed this Thieves Guild member in the past. Oh, wow. Because she has like all this crazy stuff that goes on because of basically this like warlock she serves. And so that original member was one of the best friends of one of the other guild members. And so he like learned that she had been impersonating his best friend who she killed. And then there was another party member who had been getting like visions of this drow character because he had this sword that like wants to consume all these souls that were here. So it was just like this huge thing where like everything is like, and then, yeah, so all that happened. One of our characters got like locked in this vault and like basically banished. And there was this scene where they all ended up like sort of having this conversation. And my sister, who was like the drow character, like took all the members to the grave of like the character that she had killed, basically, and like let them like talk to the character, and ended up like taking. So it was just like this whole, it was like, yeah, and so that's wild. Why I'm crying. It was just like, yeah, so that was super super epic, like 2 years in the making of like talking through the storyline with my sister. Yeah. And like dropping the tidbits, and then just like the RP between my characters was insane. Like that's what made me cry. It was like one of the character who whose best friend was the one that got killed was like, either you take me with you to like, so I can continue talking to my best friend through you, or I'm going to go like jump off a cliff. It was like, like so like heart wrenching stuff that you just, maybe it's like too much. It's hard to like, you know, explain all of the stuff that went on, but basically you can tell it was like a pretty epic moment where a lot of things like intertwined, like brought back characters from past campaigns, like very emotional. So that was super epic.
So cool.
Okay, I have to ask this real quick. Is that one character still locked in a vault to this day?
What do I reveal? I have not made any official decisions, but I do think that character is probably going to come back at some point to maybe be like a bad guy and work with some of the villains. Yeah. And that was something that we talked about at one point. Yeah. Yeah. My player, it's my brother-in-law who runs one of the games that I play. And he was like, I think I just want to like, you know, transition this character out. So he was like slowly becoming like more chaotic and evil. And the whole party was kind of like, what are we going to do with him? And so when he tried to kill this other character, our cleric in the group banished him, and everyone like ran out of the vault, and there was like this key that they had to pull off to get out. And so he tried to like throw this sword like through the door, and the door closed, and then all this other cool stuff happened. But it was crazy. It was so good.
I just saw that happen like in my head the way
I was
watching that happen.
Yeah,
that is so freaking cool.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the moments. Like,
get bored. You could totally write this up into a fantasy novel. That would.
I know, right?
Yeah. I think like you need to like get all that together in those players again and like film that like session as an actual play. Like that would be so cool to watch.
And that's what I
wish I could rewatch it.
I know those are the moments where I've had maybe not quite to that, you know, level of things all culminating, but there's been a few moments like, man, wish we would have been recording it just for my own, you know, not for anybody else, just for my own sake to be able to go back and, you know, because it's such a beautiful moment when you as the DM are able to present these different things throughout so many different sessions, and then your players just kind of take it and run with it, and they're just having moments on their own with each other. It's literally the thing that keeps me going in D&D is, you know, when my players are pulling tidbits from the world that, you know, you can tell that they then feel a part of it. They're invested in the story and they're just continuing to build. And it is just the best feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like that's what keeps us all kind of DMing, you know, is like those moments that, make people go like, what? No way.
Yes.
It makes all the prep so worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
We were all kind of doing a little bit of research, and there was something as we coming up on your Instagram. You have a lot of like Renfair pictures.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite, like a go-to, like cosplay that you do, or like have you seen any that are just like truly outrageous that stick out to you, like whether that you have or anybody else that you've seen? Because I think they're super cool.
Yeah, I will say like my Renfair adventures just started like 2 or 3 years ago, but like both my sisters are like super into everything I'm into, like D&D, magic, Lord of the Rings, like all this stuff. So it's super fun because we go together. And so we've gone a couple times over the last few years. I don't know that I've done anything like super cool yet. I'm trying to think. I just normally wear like basic medieval garb, but I see a lot of people with like either like mushroom or like floral hats that are huge. They're so cool. There was one woman at the she had hooves, and I think it was just kind of like this little tiny thing. Am I still there or am I cutting out?
Yeah, no, you're good, Jay.
Okay, good. Yeah, so she was basically walking on her tiptoes, like, and looked like a fawn, you know, like on the bottom half, which was really cool. But I was like, that takes some dedication to be walking on your tiptoes all day on like uneven, dirty ground. Yeah. So
that's crazy.
I'm going for comfort.
I always like, you know, I mean, not that boys are excluded to this, but I'm going to say like girl to girl, like every time I see a cosplay that involves heels at a Ren Fair, I'm like, I'm like, bow to you.
I was just about
like,
to say, it's amazing. One of the great benefits of, you know, the simplicity of, you know, being a man and dressing in that way is most of the things that we have are comfort over, you know.
Yes. Just like
they're very practical.
I'm wearing like boots with insoles and I'm like, my feet hurt so bad by the end of the day.
Yeah, so hot too. It's like, ugh, hot feet. No, thank you.
The commitment of some of these cosplayers, though, is like amazing.
Yeah, it's wild. I'm going to the Ohio Ren Fair in a few weeks, actually. And so I've not even worn it yet. This will be my first like big Ren Fair, and have a whole outfit. And I'm already thinking like, my God, I'm going to be so sweaty. It's not going to be pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. My brother-in-law and like one or two other friends went with us this summer, and it was like 95 degrees, just long sleeves, pants. I'm like, that's not good.
Yeah.
And those are the moments where I always think, man, it'd be cool to live in medieval times, you know? And then I think, well, it's nice that we have medicine, and it's nice that we have air conditioning, and, you know,
plumbing.
Then I realized, no, I actually love to be pampered and comfortable all the time.
Yeah, for real.
There's a comedian, I can't remember what his name is, but he has a funny bit where he talks about that. He's like, if you thought about it, we all live the lives of kings and queens now, because imagine, you know, 400 years ago being like, I demand that my place be a certain temperature at all times. And I demand only this particular piece of the chicken to eat. And like all the, I was like, that's actually a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That is fair.
I'm excited because I'm going to my first fantasy ball this weekend. Yeah, my sister like reached out to me. She's like, hey, there's this fantasy ball that I went to like a year ago. It's called the Labyrinth Ball in LA. And so she's like, let's do it. So we're like flying in on Saturday morning, going to the ball Saturday night, and then taking off on Sunday. So we'll be a whirlwind.
That's amazing. Definitely following along for that adventure. That sounds so fun.
Yeah. I'm very excited. I have to like work. I'm like working on getting my outfit together. So after this, I got to like go make some shoes look cool.
Yeah.
What is it called? Labyrinth?
Yeah. I think the Labyrinth Masquerade is what it is. And they're like super strict about costumes too. Like, I guess when my sister went before, one of the guys with them had like, you know, just like a tux on, but they're like, nope, you need to go get a mask or something else. Otherwise you can't come in. So I'm like, dang, now the pressure's on.
That's kind of cool though.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
That's
I think I think we're in like the golden age of nerddom now, but I think we need more of it. I think those need to be like regular events. I live in a fairly small town in northern Indiana, so like there's not that much going on here, and I think we need more of that. There needs to be more Ren fairs, more balls, you know, hosted that you know, you have to dress a specific way. I think that needs to come back around.
Agreed.
Holy shit, this is,
but,
this
you know,
is
the, again, in air like, conditioning the
website, like. Wow. Amazing art.
Yeah.
And it's been going on for 27 years.
What? Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, you should check out their Instagram just to see some of the costumes people wear. Oh, yeah, it's insane.
Okay.
That's wild.
That's
that is wild.
Definitely link that in the show notes because I'm looking it up. Right.
I'm gonna have to say we're gonna probably have to come to a close here. We're coming up on an hour and a half, and we do want to still honor the tradition here where it's about bite-sized chunks of an episode here to and from work. Is anybody have anything else for Casey as far as anything goes? Casey, what can people do to find you on social medias? What are you working on currently? Do you have any sneak peeks you can give us for candles? How can people find you?
For sure. Instagram is probably the best place. My personal page is just Casey Cleary. KCKSEYCLEARY, or just Firelight Fables. You can also find me there. Currently I do have a couple new scents in the works. I've had a lot of requests for like foodie themed scents. So I've been burn testing a lot of like kind of fall and winter ones. We'll see if I get the fall ones done in time. I feel like I'm running behind. So that's in the works. And then also potentially like a Lovecraft Cthulhu type. Just for people playing like Arkham Horror. Is it Candela Obscura? I think it's the horror one. So I'm not like, I haven't read much like Lovecraft horror type stuff, but I know a lot of people like those vibes. And the scent I think I've finalized is really good. So, so those exciting. Are kind of some of the new things.
That's exciting. Yeah.
That's really exciting.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I'll speak for myself, but I think on behalf of all of us, thank you so much for everything that you've not only done for us, but the TTRPG space as a whole. Truly, what you do is incredible. And I think it just raises the bar for everybody else to continue with their craft and continue to get better. It is truly incredible to see what you do and are going to continue to do. And we're really grateful that we're a tiny little part of that journey. So
absolutely.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I love being able to support, you know, anyone in the tabletop community that's, you know, promoting what you guys are promoting, like helping people learn how to be better DMs and just, I don't know, talking about like our real life DM D&D journey. Yeah.
That's the whole thing here is just talking real life, getting down and dirty with D&D and other tabletop RPGs and all nerddom stuff. But guys, also too, you can use code StoryCrafters for 15% off your order at FirelightFables.com. Go ahead and support Casey. Do everything that you do and show her some love. From all of us at the StoryCrafters, I'm Jeff. We have Nicole, Jared, Charlie, and guest here tonight, Casey from Firelight Fables Candle Company. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye.
Good job, guys. Cool. I'm gonna go ahead. and end the recording here.